You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast. It's 7 a.m. on Tuesday, the 5th of August, 2025, and just a shout out to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and it's just me in the studio this morning, although we will be joined by Juliet later in the program, who will be joining us over the phone. So I hope you are all having a really lovely morning. Hopefully you're still cozy at home, not yet having to brave the cold, and you have got a nice cup of tea or a cup of coffee to, keep you warm and, while you sit back and relax and enjoy the show. So, just give you a bit of a rundown on what you can expect on today's program. At 7:15, we will be joined by May Aziz, who is the national spokesperson for Everybody's Home, which is a national campaign dedicated to solving the housing crisis in Australia. And so May recently authored a new report into Australia's housing crisis called Out of Reach, and will be speaking to us about some of the key findings of the report in relation to rentals and social housing. So that's coming up first. We'll then be joined by Margaret Beavers, who is a former GP who now teaches medicine at the University of Melbourne. She's also Vice President of the Medical Association for the Prevention of War. And Margaret will be on the show to speak on behalf of organisers of a rolling hunger strike for Palestine. So this hunger strike is being organised by a coalition of healthcare worker groups. So we'll be speaking about that at 7:30. At 7:45, we'll be playing a speech from the Convergence on Canberra, which took place between the 20th and the 22nd of July, uniting Palestine allies from across the continent. And we'll be hearing from Rima Naji, who was a Greens candidate for the federal seat of Moreton. At 8 o'clock, we will be presenting an interview by Beth from Done By Law, who spoke to Skyla Trevowis, who is the Legal Pod program coordinator and lawyer with Youth Law. So in that conversation, Skyla and Beth chat about youth law and their various programs. And finally, at 8:15, Juliet will be back on the show, and she'll be speaking with Alison Wong, who is the founder and creative director of Effulgent, which is a community-led queer fundraiser. So they'll be speaking about the upcoming fourth installment of the fundraiser coming up in September, as well as raising money for trans healthcare. So we've got a pretty big show coming up, so keep a look to 3CR. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now. One, two.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and online at 3cr.org.au. These are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 5th of August 2025. Gunai Gundijamara and Jabulwong Independent Victorian Senator Lydia Thorpe has responded to Prime Minister Albanese's policy announcement ahead of his address to Garma Festival last Saturday, saying that he has offered nothing meaningful for First Peoples. Senator Thorpe is reiterating her calls for a national truth-telling commission, a recommitment to treaty, and urgent national action on the incarceration and deaths in custody crisis, as well as child removals. Senator Thorpe called Albanese's annual excursion to Garma as a mere exercise in optics, an attempt to blackwash the Labour Party. She decried the performative engagement with First Peoples song, dance and culture, and the continued focus on economic empowerment while disregarding Albanese's own election promise of committing to the Uluru Statement from the Heart in full. Senator Thorpe called for a federal truth-telling commission and a recommitment to treaty, as well as real action to address the incarceration crisis. This includes reinvestment into what works, community-controlled solutions, culturally safe bail supports, and properly funded legal help. Also in the news, Israel is carrying out more demolitions this year than in any other year of the occupation, which began in 1967. Israeli authorities have already destroyed 783 structures, a figure that does not include the large-scale destruction in refugee camps, leading to the forced displacement of 1,119 people, according to the UN. In the Palestinian refugee camps, Israel has destroyed about 600 structures in the Jenin camp and a combined 300 structures in the Tulkarem and Nur Shams camps as part of military raids it launched at the start of this year. Human rights groups, civilians and analysts said the real aim of Israel's systematic home demolitions and forced displacement is to make life unbearable for Palestinians, so more will consider leaving if they can. Muraj Adala, a human rights researcher with Palestinian human rights organization Al-Haq, said, "Israel's goal in the West Bank is the same as its goal in Gaza. It wants to target all Palestinians." Jadala argued that Israel's war in Gaza, which many experts have called a genocide, has shocked the world and distracted many from its unprecedented destruction in the West Bank. Under international law, Israel is prohibited from destroying private property anywhere in occupied Palestinian territory and from establishing settlements or outposts. Since the start of this year, about 40,000 Palestinians have fled Israeli military operations in West Bank refugee camps. In other news this week, Melbourne City Mission and Social Ventures Australia have released their second annual Victorian Youth Homelessness Snapshot at Victorian Parliament. The 2025 results reveal that 83% of young Victorians are losing their homes due to family violence, with 31% of them losing their homes before the age of 16. They are being cut off from school and employment pathways and instead ending up in emergency departments and at risk of self-harm and suicide. Other key findings included that two-thirds of children experiencing family violence who then lose their homes were known to Victoria's child protection system, that a quarter experienced chronic pain, and that young people from First Nations, rural or regional areas, LGBTIQA+, and overseas-born backgrounds were all overrepresented. Melbourne City Mission CEO Vicky Sutton said the census of youth homelessness was a call to action for all levels of government. She said, "It is traumatic to lose family and home at an age where most of us are spreading our wings and exploring future possibilities. Instead of revolving doors and dead ends, we need a smart system that reduces the amount of time children and young people are alone with nowhere to live. We need support and housing options that kick in immediately to limit the lifelong impact of family violence and homelessness." And finally, in the headlines, at least 68 African refugees and migrants have died and 74 others remain missing after a boat capsized off the coast of Yemen, according to the United Nations Migration Agency. Abusato Isev, head of the UN's International Organization for Migration, or IOM, in Yemen, reported that the boat, with 154 Ethiopians aboard, capsized off Yemen's province of Abyan. The waterways between Yemen and the Horn of Africa are a common but perilous route for refugees and migrants traveling in both directions. The area saw a spike in Yemenis fleeing the country after the civil war broke out in 2014. Houthi rebels and government forces reached a truce deal in April 2022 that has resulted in a decrease in violence and the slight easing of the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen. Meanwhile, some of those fleeing conflict in Africa, particularly in Somalia and Ethiopia, have sought refuge in Yemen or have sought to travel through the country to the more prosperous Gulf countries. The route remains one of the busiest and most perilous migration routes in the world, according to the IOM. Over the past decade, at least 2,082 people have disappeared along the route, including 693 known to have drowned. Yemen currently houses around 380,000 refugees and migrants. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, the 5th of August, 2025. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
As the Taco Helm apocalypse approaches us with impending doom, it's time for the best alternative comedy debate in NAM.
Join us for the 21st annual Green Left Comedy Debate, where progressive comedians will debate whether or not billionaires should run the government.
Featuring your famous, award-winning comedian Tom Ballard as our MC, with the brilliant talents of Nikki Barry, Hellchild, Shirley Hood, Rose Callahan, Sarah Bartolo, and David Fowles.
It will be happening at Saturday, August 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall, with dinner and doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show beginning at 8 p.m.
There'll be food, drinks and laughter, and special guest President Donald Dump, leading the positive team. Take it away, Don.
It's going to be a big debate, a great debate, a beautiful debate. I thought of it, by the way.
And all proceeds to the event will go towards activist media Green Left. So come along and join us on Saturday, August the 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall. And book your tickets by going onto the Green Left website or visiting greenleft.org/events. Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. Before we delve into our segments this morning, we are going to play a song for you all. This is by Alice Sky, who is a Wagaya Wemba Wemba woman and singer-songwriter. And this song is called I Feel Better But I Don't Feel Good, and it's from her 2021 album of the same name. Alice Sky with her 2021 song I Feel Better But I Don't Feel Good. We are jumping ahead a little bit, and we're actually going to play for you now a speech by Rima Nagy. The convergence on Canberra took place from the 20th to the 22nd of July and saw Palestine allies from across the nation come together to call upon the Australian government to impose sanctions on Israel in response to the state's ongoing genocide of Palestinians. We're going to hear now from Rima Nagy, who spoke on July 22nd, which was the opening of Parliament. Rima was the Greens candidate for the federal seat of Moreton, and an education worker, community organiser and an activist, Rima moved to so-called Australia 12 years ago after her parents were forcibly displaced twice from Palestine. In her powerful speech, Rima calls out the violence of settler colonial projects, including so-called Australia, and the silence, complicity, and lack of action from Australian politicians. Just a content warning on this one. Listeners are advised that the following speech contains references to sexual violence. Please take care when listening.
Elders past and present, and I recognize that I'm a migrant settler with immense privileges on this stolen land, and I owe it to the Aboriginal people of this land who allowed us to work and organize on their stolen land to speak truthfully. The culture that the British, the colonizers, brought with them and forced upon the indigenous people of this land relies on hierarchy, and maintaining this hierarchy relies on violence. Ableism, sexism, misogyny, racism, supremacy, these aren't just unfortunate byproducts of this culture. They are core to its design and essential to upholding its power structure. And this is the same culture that made it safe for a Zionist to assault my friend this morning while we were having breakfast, physically assaulting her by shoving a sign that talks about dead babies on her face, injuring her face and her eye. Shame. And I'm also standing in solidarity with every person who was a target to those hideous attacks by Zionists. I stand in solidarity with Chelsea Wadigo in Maganjin, who put together the anti-racist conference. And I stand in solidarity with Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah, with Sarah Saleh, and with everyone who was and who experienced attacks by Zionists across this country and across the globe. Friends, comrades and allies, those coming days are very important for our movement, not just nationally, but also globally. And the question that we are faced with is that how do we turn this incredible, powerful community force into political action? How do we turn this huge mobilization into action that will turn the table and turn the dynamics of power and put this power back at the hands of the people? Some of us were born into this struggle and have dedicated our lives to advocate for human rights and justice for all. And some have joined us at different stages of this struggle, and we welcome everyone from all backgrounds, ethnicities, races, sexualities, and genders. This movement, there is no room for hate in this movement. And what we've come to realize as we all got together is that my liberation is tied to your liberation. Yeah. Your liberation is tied to my liberation. And it's something that Rima Hassan said very eloquently: we're not the ones liberating Palestine, it's Palestine that's liberating us. And we're not walking alone. Those politicians in Parliament are betting on us to be too fragmented and too weak to organize together. And it's incumbent on us to form a coalition with different grassroots movements a coalition with an anti-colonial, anti-racist, anti-imperialist commitment, a coalition that would be too big to be ignored. Because our challenge isn't about policies. Our challenge isn't that we can't come up with good policies or that we don't have a vision of how a society would look like free of colonization. Our challenge is that people are feeling too disempowered, too disengaged and too frustrated and angry at a political system that has failed them time and again. And the challenge is to turn this anger and this frustration into empowerment, into action. If politicians inside this chamber think that they're too small and too insignificant to do anything meaningful in times of genocide, what's the point of them sitting there? Cutting ribbons and handing out awards? If the politicians sitting in the chamber think they're too insignificant to implement change in times of genocide, then we don't! About us coming together is that the failure of our political system and the failure of our politicians did not distort our image of humanity, did not push us to disengagement and disempowerment. Because if they think we'll back off simply because they're ignoring us, they do not know who they're up against. Sexualities and genders coming together to say not in our name. The weapons parts that leave Sydney Airport and land in Tel Aviv to deliver parts be assembled into fighter jets that shred the limbs of innocent men, women and children in Gaza is a stain on our humanity and it must end now. The genocidal Israeli regime must be sanctioned and people, those war criminals and their enablers must be held to account. We're talking about a genocide where death is not the worst thing that can happen. We're talking about mothers who watch their babies, their newborn babies, withdraw from life slowly and painfully, not because there is lack of formula, because formula is a few kilometers away and it's not allowed to be let in.
Shame!
Blocking aid, blocking oxygen to incubators.
Shame!
We're talking about a regime that's using rape against Palestinians. A full UN report was published with documented reports about Palestinians experiencing rape by metal tools, by dogs, and all of that was not enough to apply sanctions. Shame! And we must realize that Palestinians were made to rely on aid. Palestinians did not need UNRWA or any other food and aid agency. Palestinians are a nation denied access to our own natural resources. Down with the occupation that made Palestinians rely on food aid and be put at the mercy of a genocidal, racist, Zionist regime. Every racist lobby that's trying to turn us against each other. Down with every racist lobby influencing the decisions of those politicians, our very compromised politicians. Down with that. Politicians who aren't even responding to emails about Palestine. Public servants! That's who they are. They need to be reminded of who they are. Public servants, not lobby servants. They answer to us, not to the lobbyists. And this new wave of allegedly progressive Labour MPs must be
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Rima Naji speaking in Canberra on Tuesday the 22nd of July as part of the Convergence on Canberra. And if you need to speak to anyone about some of the issues and content that was discussed in the speech, you can contact Lifeline on 131114. We are now joined on the air by Margaret Beavis, who is a former GP who now teaches medicine at the University of Melbourne. She's also Vice President of the Medical Association for the Prevention of War. Margaret joins us on the show this morning to speak on behalf of the organisers of a rolling hunger strike by healthcare workers for Palestine. This action, which is taking place across the continent, is demanding action from the Australian government to end the forced starvation and genocide in Gaza. It is organised by a coalition of healthcare worker groups, including Australia and Aotearoa, New Zealand Doctors for Palestine, Healthcare Workers for Palestine, ANMF Vic Nurses and Midwives for Palestine. Welcome to 3CR, Margaret.
Thank you very much for having me.
So in my introduction just now, I said you're a former GP who now teaches medicine at the University of Melbourne. I was wondering, with all the news and images that are coming out about the forced starvation of Palestinians in Gaza, how has that affected your teaching or even made you think back or even as your position as a former GP, how do you reflect on what's happening at the moment?
Well, I think you don't have to be a GP to see that it's completely appalling and unacceptable what's happening in Gaza in front of us is beyond words. I think your listeners would all be familiar with the deaths that are going on, the children. The fact that even before the starvation, a classroom of children, so just imagine sort of 26, 28 children a day, I think 28 now, a day dying, being killed in a population of about 2 million. So if you imagine Melbourne chopped in half, so one half of Melbourne having a classroom of children killed every day for nearly 2 years, I think it's clear to everybody. And I thought having a Lifeline mentioned just after that last segment, this is so distressing for so many people, and I think what we need to do is get the Australian government to do what it can. We need to get them to really impose some trade sanctions. We still are selling weapons and weapons parts that get to Israel, so we have to have a complete two-way arms embargo on the Israeli government until it stops the genocide and allows unfettered humanitarian aid into Gaza. There are so many detained Palestinians who more than 160 are healthcare workers who have been imprisoned, and many, when they are released, if they do get released or survive being imprisoned, report torture. There was a surgeon who was told they were going to destroy his hand so he could never operate again. I find it hard to imagine, and I think Australia we have to really keep the pressure up. And this hunger strike is aiming to try and break the silence and the action, because by being silent, you're really complicit.
And, we're seeing actions come prop up all over the place. We saw on the weekend a huge turnout in Nar, Melbourne, but also, across the Sydney Harbour Bridge as well. And there are lots of people on this continent who are trying to do everything they can, whether that's protesting or direct action or organising mutual aid for people in Palestine, and now this hunger strike. So I think, even when at a time when the media and even politicians are hoping that this will go away or that people will stay silent, we know that that's definitely not the case. I was wondering if you could talk us through the rolling hunger strike action that is being organised by healthcare workers. When did it start, and what are we seeing in terms of the solidarity from healthcare workers across Australia?
It started about a month ago. There's now, I've not got the exact figures, but I think it's over 100 people who have done a 24-hour fast for this action. And some are doing it on a weekly basis. It is really comes on a background where there's been demonstrations, vigils, work with Amnesty International in nationwide actions. Lots of us have written letters to members of Parliament and to medical organisations. I personally have written to the College of GPs several times, only to get told that they want to stay politically neutral. There was a coordination of a global week for Garson hospitals where health workers from countries around the world held demonstrations to protest the sort of medicide, the bombing of hospitals. I think it's 36 or 37 out of 38 hospitals in Gaza have been bombed. The hospital, the scenario in the hospitals is appalling in that not only are facilities really badly damaged, but they don't have, because of the aid being stopped, they don't even have the antibiotics or the materials or the clean water to provide good care. So you have children who have amputations without, I should say this is I should put a content warning on this, what I'm about to say, so if people are distressed, perhaps turn off. But basically there's children who are having amputations without anaesthetic who then go on to get gangrene in those wounds that we can't treat, have to have more amputations to get rid of the gangrene, and then die of the infection. And this is just, like, appalling. And the starvation on top of this, these kids, because they've got such a low calorie intake, don't have the normal resistance to fight infections. And that's just the medical side of it, let alone the sort of general widespread distress of pregnant mothers who can't, and people who've just had babies who can't feed their children. I mean, I think the hunger strike is a measure of desperation to try and get the Australian government to do whatever it can to pressure the Israeli government, because the current Israeli government is behaving completely outside international law, and it has to be stopped somehow. Mm. This genocide has to stop.
Yeah. And, yeah, just to reiterate what you said just now, Margaret, about forced starvation being on top of everything else that we've been seeing over the past 2 years and even before that. And, you know, it seems like perhaps more and more mainstream media outlets are picking up stories now and are finally talking about what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank because of the images of starvation. But like you said, this has been ongoing for 2 years, and we're seeing, we've seen so much death and destruction over the past 2 years as well. You mentioned before, you know, you've contacted, you know, some medical organisations, and they said that they would prefer to stay politically neutral. I mean, how does that sit with you as a person, but also as a former GP and someone now who teaches medicine to other people, that idea of quote unquote political neutrality in a situation like this?
I think it was Martin Luther King talking about the Vietnam War, but it applies here too. He said, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. And I'm sorry, this is a time when Israel, a supposed democracy, with whom you have a trading relationship, including for weapons, there is a time when we are complicit if we don't bring in sanctions against the Israeli government. And I have to say, if it were Jewish people, if it was Palestinians doing the same to Jewish people, I would be just as distressed. I mean, the history is long and terrible. But these are people, Gaza has been blockaded for so many years. I think it was 17 or 18 years before this even started, before the horrible events of October 7. But this is completely inhumane. It's completely against international law. It's completely unacceptable. And politically neutral is not politically neutral. It's statement. You know, what you walk past is what you accept.
Mm. My final question for you this morning, Margaret, because unfortunately we're running out of time, but if there are any listeners out there this morning who work in the healthcare system and would like to participate in the Rolling Hunger Strike, where can they go to find out more information?
There's an Instagram page, which is at Health Workers for Palestine I'm misreading it. At Health Workers for Palestine, 4 being a number, it's NSW. Also, I think on your show notes, the page on the website with this, I send a link where people can, if they go to the 3CR website, they can find the link and sign up. And the more people we can get to sign up, please consider signing up. It's 24 hours of not eating, and you think of what the people in Gaza are going through. I just can't imagine, I can't speak for them, but we could at least try and raise the profile of this issue and put more pressure on our government to put pressure on the Israeli government.
Yeah, thank you for that, Margaret, and we'll make sure to pop that link, the sign-up sheet, in our show notes, like you said, as well as the handles of all the Instagram pages that people can follow. But for now, thank you so much for joining us on 3CR Breakfast this morning to talk to us about this.
Thank you.
So we've been speaking to Margaret Beavis, who is a member representing healthcare workers for Palestine, about the hunger strike being held to express solidarity with the people of Gaza and to urge the Australian government to apply meaningful pressure to Israel to end the genocide and to allow humanitarian aid to flow into the Gaza Strip. The details of the strike and its demands, as well as images and videos, can be viewed on Instagram. And I'll say that handle for everyone one more time. That's Health Workers for Palestine, NSW, 4 being the number 4. And if you visit our show notes later today, you should find a link to the sign-up sheet if you'd like to partake. We are going to head to another song now. This is by Rin McArdle, who we've spoken to on the show before. She is a Nam-based multi-instrumentalist, songwriter and producer, and we're going to play her song Strings. If you'd like to purchase the song, all proceeds from this song are donated to Palestine Australia Relief and Action. This is Rin McArdle with her song Strings.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
The Victorian State Government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight to defend it at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition on Tuesday, 12th of August, 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast on 8:55 a.m. And up next, we're chatting to May Aziz, the national spokesperson for Everybody's Home, a national campaign dedicated to solving the housing crisis in Australia. The campaign encompasses a coalition of organisations across housing, homelessness and welfare, working towards the goal of ensuring safe and affordable housing for everyone. May is also the Deputy Director of AngloCare Australia, a network of welfare and care-focused organisations. May recently authored a new report into Australia's housing crisis entitled Out of Reach, and is here to chat about some of the key findings of the report in relation to rentals and social housing. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, May.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about who Everybody's Home is as an organisation and, like, what the campaign presents?
So you mentioned Everybody's Home is a coalition of housing and welfare organisations. We're made up of organisations like AngloCare, like Homelessness Australia, like the Salvation Army, because we basically exist to boost social housing. So back when Australia had affordable homes to rent and to buy, the government was a really big player in providing that housing. The government used to build about 30,000 homes a year. And right up until the early 80s, about 1 in 3 renters rented from the government in some capacity. So that was people like public servants, teachers, construction workers. They all had the opportunity to access and live in low-cost rentals provided by the government. What this report looks at, Out of Reach, basically how much social housing has declined, especially in the past 10 years, and how much that is correlated with rent increases. So we really need to start seeing social housing not just as a safety net for people who need it the most, although, of course, that's important, but actually as a way to make housing more affordable for everybody and make social housing an option for more people.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like, you know, we've had such a shift going from where social housing, you know, made up a big portion, a much bigger portion of the housing percentage and, you know, was offered to people, working across a range of different roles and, not just as, you know, a resource for the people in, you know, the most dire need. But, yeah, can you talk us through a little bit more about, you know, what's changed in terms of rentals over the past 10 years? What were some of the findings in your report?
So we found that rents have gone up enormously over the past 10 years. We looked at capital cities and found that they have gone up by about 60% over the past 10 years, but most of that's been in the last 3 years, actually. So about 30% of those increases has been in the past 3 years. So basically from 2022 to 2025. So we really are seeing these huge rent increases having an impact. I think we hear every year that there's been, you know, a rent increase in the order of 5 to 10%. This really shows you what the cumulative impact of those rent increases look like over a decade. I don't know anybody who's had a wage increase of 60% over the past decade, and I don't know anyone who's factoring a 60% increase in their housing costs over the next decade. So this is quite a big shift.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's really helpful to have, you know, the concrete figures of, you know, what the increases have actually looked like and to, yeah, compare that, as you said, to wage increases. But, yeah, in terms of, you know, where the rental increases have, you know, hit the hardest, is that happening, you know, you said it's looking at capital cities. Is that in the biggest cities like Sydney or Melbourne or other capital cities across Australia?
So we've had big growth in Sydney and Melbourne, but what we've actually found is that the cities that have historically been considered the most affordable are the ones that have had the biggest rent increases. So those cities that have kind of offered a bit of a reprieve from Sydney and Melbourne are now becoming less and less affordable and starting to catch up. So the biggest rent increase that we saw was actually in Adelaide. They had an 81% increase over the last decade, which is pretty enormous, followed by Brisbane, which had almost a 70% increase over the past 10 years. Hobart has also had a really major increase, 76%. These are cities that had a reputation for being pretty affordable. But what we're seeing now is that rents are just really, really going up there, and they're starting to catch up with places like Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah. No, it sounds like there's been, you know, a huge shift, and, yeah, that's pretty wild that, yeah, it's been the cities that were more affordable but are now becoming less and less so. And, yeah, in terms of social housing, so, yeah, you know, you were telling us earlier about how the percentage of social housing has really gone down. But moving forward, how would we need to increase social housing to tackle these issues, and, you know, what numbers would we be looking at?
So we modelled a couple of different scenarios. The National Housing Supply and Affordability Council, which is the government's main advisors on housing, they recommend that we move to 6% social housing, 6% social housing making up all housing stock in Australia in the medium term, and then 10% in the long term. So we looked at what that would mean. And to get to 6% over the next 10 years, we would need to be building about 30,000 homes every single year, which is pretty big. And then to get up to 10% over the next two decades, we would need to be building about 55,000 homes every year. So this is really, really big. But we are also very behind. We actually have a shortfall at the moment of 640,000 homes. So the issue is we're very, very behind. And every year that we wait, we get further and further behind, not just to make housing, social housing, an option for more people, but just to clear the backlog for the people who actually need it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, there's just so much need, you know, to be, you know, addressing it. You said, as you said, that backlog, and, you know, also preparing, I guess, for the future as well. But, yeah, we've got the new parliament. They've been sitting for the first time, and I know that everybody's home, you know, does have some demands that you want to make towards the government. So, yeah, what would they be, and, you know, why is this the government's responsibility to take on?
So the biggest thing that we're calling for is a really big boost to social housing, obviously. That's the main call for this report. When we look around the world and we look at the countries that have either avoided their housing crisis altogether or managed to start turning it around, they are countries where the government is playing a really big role in providing housing. They are not just leaving it to the private sector. So in Australia, we've got a lot of rhetoric about how the government is taking the housing crisis seriously, but they are really not stepping up and putting their money where their mouth is when it comes to actually building social housing and providing housing to people who need it the most, but then also using the housing that they build to actually make homes more affordable for everybody, which is what we need to see in the longer term. The other thing that we're calling for is tax reform. We've got this productivity roundtable coming up. We've got a tax system that is absolutely pushing up the cost of housing and is making it more expensive for everybody, making it more expensive for people to live near where they work. And that is having massive economic impacts. So we do need to see them really tackle the tax system to spend their money building homes instead of spending their money building, propping up investors.
Yeah, definitely. I think, what we have seen and, you know, what has caused, you know, these big changes in the past 10 years, you know, is that focus on investors rather than renters. But yeah, before we wrap up, May, could you just, quickly, tell us how our 3CR listeners can find out more about Everybody's Home and, more about the report as well?
You can visit our website, www.everybodyshome.com.au, and there you can sign our petition. You could also share our story. And we have a few, share your story if you've had a big rent increase or you've, you're in a situation where you're struggling to afford the housing that you're in. Or if you know someone, you can share a story. You can also write to your local MP using our website, and you can see what rental stress is like in your area using our heat maps. So there's a few different ways that people can get involved.
Yeah, that all sounds like, such interesting and useful resources available through Everybody's Home. So, yeah, thank you for sharing. And, we really appreciate you joining us on Tuesday Breakfast this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We've been speaking to May Aziz, the national spokesperson for Everybody's Home, which is a national campaign dedicated to solving the housing crisis. We've been chatting about rentals and social housing and how to fix these problems.
I can't get out of this hole I've found. I've seen the light, it's not going out. She talks me up, I bring myself down. Comparing the best parts of you to the worst in can stretch my legs and bone. Oh, I'm taking my place, running with the hurricane.
That was Camp Cope and their 2022 song, Running with the Hurricane. You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. Last Tuesday, the 22nd of July, Done by Law presenter Beth spoke to Scarlett Truovis, Legal Pod Program Coordinator and Lawyer with Youth Law, Victoria's Free Specialist Community Legal Center for Young People Under 25 and their advocates. In this conversation, Scarlett discusses Youth Law's Legal Pod and Heads Up programs, which focus on supporting young people and leaving out-of-home residential care, a cohort of the community who are unfairly overcriminalized and overrepresented in the criminal justice system. Done by Law is a program on 3CR where current legal issues presented by the Federation of Community Legal Centers giving an alternative view of proposed legislation changes. You can catch Done by Law every Tuesday evening from 6 to 6:30 p.m. or by going to 3cr.org.au/donebylaw.
A person is overcriminalized if they are subject to inappropriate, unnecessary, or unjustified police or legal system contact, including stop, question, search, arrest, prosecution, and detention. This is one driver of overrepresentation, where a person or group is more likely to be in contact with the criminal justice system than their group's proportion to the population would predict. Youth Law, the Young People's Legal Rights Centre, is a free statewide legal service for young people up to age 25 in Victoria. Scarlett, to start us off, could you give us a brief background to Youth Law and the different ways that it supports young people in Victoria with their legal needs?
Yeah, certainly. So as you've mentioned, Youth Law is a specialist community legal centre for young people under 25 in Victoria. So we provide accessible, holistic and multidisciplinary legal services while also addressing systemic legal and social justice issues. So we are predominantly funded to provide services to young people who are particularly vulnerable or who are experiencing extremely challenging circumstances or hardship. So through our programs, we really seek to amplify youth voices and leverage service sector collaboration to achieve positive change. So we have a number of programs that deliver our legal service, which I'll run through now. One's the Daily Legal Helpline, which is a phone service the young people can contact with in business hours Monday to Friday. We have a duty lawyer service at Melbourne Children's Court, an early intervention project for adolescents using violence in the home, My Legal Pod program for care leavers, an early intervention crime team. We have a drop-in clinic on Fridays to help young people with their fines. We do weekly outreach at Front Yard, which is Melbourne City Mission's youth service and an access point for young people experiencing homelessness in Melbourne CBD. We have a Ballarat Youth Law Office, who have a partnership with Ballarat Health Justice and Ballarat Community Health. We provide lawyers to support the RMIT Student Legal Service, and Beth has already touched on our membership of the Smart Justice for Young People Coalition. So we really believe that it's vital that young people are given the chance to advocate for their own rights and also gain a practical understanding of how the law affects them. We think it's equally vital that young people are able to also contribute to conversations which shape our justice system.
It's so much, isn't it? And full disclosure, I also work for Youth Law and I love working with Scarlett. So tell us more, Scarlett, about the Legal Pod program and the young people that it assists.
Yeah, so the Legal Pod program is a free legal service for out-of-home care leavers aged 18 to 25. So at its inception, the pod program got its name because we envisaged a whale pod offering a sense of safety and protection for our young people. So that's where the name kind of comes from. And it provides long-term legal assistance to young people who've left out of home care. So we connect a young person with a pod made up of a small team of lawyers from partner firms who work on a pro bono basis to provide ongoing legal assistance for up to 3 years. So we recognise that young people in the out-of-home care system are really some of the most vulnerable and traumatised people in our community, with many having experienced some form of abuse or neglect, family violence or parental substance abuse prior to entering care. So young people exiting care experience really high levels of disadvantage and disproportionate engagement with the criminal justice system. Young people in residential care have overwhelmingly reported a lack of control, knowledge, and trust as a barrier to them accessing legal services. It's also really important to highlight that care leavers are extremely resilient and have developed their own strategies to survive and thrive without that traditional familial support. So the Legal Pod program aims to leverage their inherent strengths to build care leavers' capacity to understand and eventually assert their legal rights.
That's fantastic. And then what are some of the common legal issues that you see?
Yeah, so as we've touched on, out-of-home care young people are overrepresented in our justice system. Youth Law did a submission to last year's National Youth Justice Inquiry, where we drew on some Victoria Legal Aid data, which revealed that of the young people on remand over the weekend, 75% of those young people had a care experience.
Wow.
So our programs are really designed to try and address this need in our community. So some really common legal issues that we assist with is crime, intervention orders and family violence support, freedom of information requests to the department for access to the young person's care records, fines, debts, and the financial assistance scheme, which was previously VOCAP for people who have been a victim of a crime.
And that FOI request for care records, I feel like that could be a really complex process for the young people, and I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, it has a significant administrative burden and a really long wait time, and it's obviously really critical for care leavers to have access to their documents, because a lot of decisions were made when maybe they were too young to remember and had little or no control over. So part of that is to help them achieve self-determination, have an understanding of their identity as they transition into adulthood.
Yeah, great. And why is Youth Law well placed to deliver this program in particular?
Yeah, so Youth Law is an integrated practice. So we have social workers working alongside lawyers, providing support, really to ensure that our approach to working with young people is holistic and trauma-informed. As I've mentioned, care leavers often experience multiple and interconnected forms of disadvantage. And by addressing these underlying issues, we can deliver really effective and early interventions. We also acknowledge that these underlying issues are often drivers to their contact with the law and makes them very visible to law enforcement. So we want to address that unmet legal need.
And how do you work with the pro bono partners that you mentioned to increase the level of legal support you can provide to care leavers? Are they meeting with the care leavers, or is that more of a Youth Law thing?
Yeah, so Youth Law being a government-funded free service, we're really committed to being accessible as possible to young people. So in order to expand the range of legal matters that we can effectively assist with, we collaborate with pro bono partner firms and use their specialised expertise to support our trauma-informed and therapeutic community practice. We also recognised that not all care leavers are ready or have capacity to engage in long-term legal representation and have ongoing contact with a pod of lawyers. So this year, Youth Law has evolved its model by moving away from the requirement to have ongoing placements with legal pods. So instead, myself will now coordinate discrete legal tasks, which allows us to assist a greater number of care leavers in a more flexible and responsive way. And so we found that this approach allows for more consistent, high-quality support that's also trauma-informed, as young people don't have to repeatedly tell their stories. And we found that this shift not only improves access to justice for a very vulnerable cohort of our community, but it also contributes to broader systemic reform by highlighting access to justice gaps, especially in the current context of youth crime that's kind of circulating at the moment.
And it must be great for them to have you as their contact as well.
Yeah, we have a mutually beneficial relationship.
And what are some of the big wins you've had?
Yeah, so in 2021, the Centre for Excellence in Child and Family Welfare conducted a really comprehensive evaluation of the Legal Pod program. And care leavers engaged in the program had on average 7 legal problems during their period of assistance. So the evaluation provided us with really solid evidence on the legal needs of young people exiting care and the benefit of legal assistance. So one particular pod client was assisted with 27 legal services during their period of engagement. Wow. And one of the most powerful things they told us was that for the first time they felt heard. They felt like their voice was mattered and they were able to have a say in decisions that affected their life.
Which is such a huge measure of success, regardless of whatever legal outcome ultimately happens.
Yeah, definitely.
So Scarlett, you work closely with support workers from agencies funded to assist young people during their transition out of state care. What kind of support do they provide and how do you collaborate?
Yeah, Youth Law has developed really great relationships with the services that support out-of-home care leavers. So in Victoria, Better Futures is the transitional program that supports young people exiting care, and that typically lasts from age 18 to 21. So these workers are highly skilled in supporting their really vulnerable clients and are often best placed to be able to assist young people with common legal issues as a trusted source, and that's provided that they are supported with the right legal information. So that kind of brings me to our Heads Up project. So we received funding from the Victoria Law Foundation towards this initiative. So it's an initiative by Youth Law which is aimed at building the knowledge and capacity of workers and agencies to better identify, understand and respond to the unmet legal needs of vulnerable young people who have left out of home care. So through targeted training, partnerships and the development of a supported help kit, the Heads Up project seeks to empower support workers to confidently assist care leavers with common legal issues and improve their access to justice. It's also going to foster ongoing collaboration amongst agencies supporting this high needs group.
That's fantastic. And I can understand legal administrative tasks can be complex. So, you know, do workers need support to complete these correctly?
Yeah, that's right. And you'd be pretty hard-pressed to find anyone who doesn't find the legal administration of a legal task difficult. They certainly can be complex. So to address this, Youth Law will provide training to really build the capacity of workers who are supporting young care leavers. And ideally, this training will equip them to identify legal issues using a care leaver-specific legal health check and a supported kit accompanying that, which provides accurate legal information, how to effectively triage legal needs and make appropriate referrals to Youth Law and also to other services. So a legal health check, if that's terminology that people aren't aware of, it's essentially a checklist that assists workers work through a number of questions with young people to identify if they have issues and if they're legal ones.
And one challenge that has faced users of the legal health check in the past is that workers can feel they may have no time to sit down and complete the form due to their high workload. How will the Heads Up program overcome this potential challenge?
Yeah, we certainly don't want the completion of a legal health check to be a barrier to care leavers accessing our service or for their support workers to triage effectively to Youth Law. We certainly understand the administrative burden of a legal matter can actually constitute an access barrier in itself. So often workers have already had informal conversations with young people where legal issues are raised, but they haven't necessarily had the tools to identify them as such. So simply having a legal health check on hand and being aware of how to use it, it offers workers a framework to spot legal needs during their everyday interactions, while also reducing the need for young people to repeatedly tell their stories.
It's fantastic to have that tool in the toolkit, and I love that flexible approach.
Yeah.
So what's your rough project timeline? So when will we be having you back on air to celebrate?
So it is a 2-year project, which was initiated in February this year. So we're definitely still in our early stages, but we're currently focused on consolidating our data and resources and engaging stakeholders to build a strong foundation. It's really integral to us that the final product is culturally safe and accessible. So we're really working on engaging with organisations such as VALS and JIRA, which are First Nations organisations, to contribute to the quality and accessibility of the Heads Up project rollout. So we plan to roll out the legal health check and training with workers in early 2026 with a full toolkit developed and ready for implementation by the middle of next year, which will include a feedback phase. At the conclusion of the period, we'll produce a final report, which will share outcomes with the broader sector. We ideally would like the completed toolkit to be made widely accessible, available online. We love Control F for finding information, and as a downloadable PDF, allowing workers and community legal services to use it easily during outreach and on-site.
And I'd imagine that these resources will be helpful to legal and non-legal workers supporting young people facing barriers more broadly, not just those working specifically with care leavers.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of the recognised unmet legal need for out-of-home care young people, Youth Law is continuing to advocate for systems change, law reform, and for further funding to build our services for care leavers. We anticipate that a long-term impact of the project is the development and consolidation of strong relationships between the disparate agencies supporting young people in the out-of-home care system, and these relationships will continue well beyond the project. Another long-term benefit that we anticipate is a wider spread adoption of legal health checks by workers for both care leavers and other people accessing youth services and community legal centres, and ultimately this will be of a huge benefit to all client groups.
Fantastic. And how can listeners contact you if they have more questions about the Legal Pod or the Heads Up programs?
Yeah, so Youth Law can be contacted by phone on 03 9113 9500, or via email at legal@youthlaw.asn.au.
Thanks so much for joining me, Scarlett.
Thank you for having me.
So I've been chatting with Scarlett Trewovis from Youth Law about the Legal Pod and Heads Up programs supporting out-of-home care leavers to address unmet legal needs. And you've been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855am, 3cr.org.au and 3CR Digital. We're going to go out with a song, Island Home by Christine Arnoux.
Hi, my name is Miss Kinnan. I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Jar Jar Rong, Kalkadoon and Yirrindali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
That was Scarlett Trewovis speaking to Beth on Done by Law about Youth Law's Legal Pod and Heads Up programs. For more information, you can head to youthlaw.asn.au. And up next, we're speaking to Alison Wong, the founder and creative director of Effulgent, a community-led queer fundraiser. Effulgent was started last year in Canberra on Ngunnawal and Ngambri country and has hosted three events so far to fundraise for local trans people to access gender-affirming healthcare. Effulgent has its fourth instalment coming up this September, and Alison is here to chat about that event as well as how Effulgent has come to be and the need for crowd raising for trans healthcare. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Alison.
Hi, thanks for having me, Julia.
Yeah, well, no, we really appreciate you coming on early on a Tuesday morning. But to start us off, can you tell us about what Effulgent is? Also, what does the word Effulgent mean?
Yeah, no worries. So Effulgent is a reference from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It means just like radiant sort of thing. Yeah, and sorry, I forget the second part of the question, Juliet.
Yes, so the first part was, why did you start Effulgent?
Yeah, so I was looking to get a double mastectomy for my, like, gender journey, I guess. And it turns out it's very expensive. So I was looking at, in just the surgeon's fees, $12,000. And on top of that, you got the admission fees, which was about $6,000, an overnight at hospital, which was about $4,000 or $5,000, and then there's all the like post-op care, medication, all that sort of thing. So it was adding up very quickly, and as someone who had just finished uni, I had a couple of like retail and hospital jobs in the past. It was not looking very affordable to me. And if I got private health insurance, even with Medicare rebate, that would only be maximum $5,000 back.
Yeah, so, wow. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of money, which I didn't have. And looking at what, like, message boards and that sort of thing, see what other people have done to raise money,
And people were like, fundraiser party, that's another way you can do it. And I had wanted to throw a queer party in Canberra for a long time. And so I was just like, yeah, now's the time. And it went really well. Our first one raised around $8,000, which was amazing. And then each party we've had a different trans person get the funding for their surgery, basically, which is really exciting and amazing that I can kind of give that to people and facilitate that funding, because otherwise just, yeah, a crazy amount of money for something that is so necessary for so many people.
Yeah, definitely. And, speaking to that, it really sounds like, you outlined the really massive costs that people face, you know, in accessing gender-affirming care. And, I think, you spoke a little bit about, the fact that Medicare doesn't really cover very much. And, could you speak a little bit more about, why it's so necessary for a lot of trans people to crowdfund to be able to access that healthcare?
So crowdfunding is a great way to reach out. It's just your friends, your circles of friends, of people who want to help out. You're just having these tens of thousands of dollars for something that is necessary and will help trans people in so many ways, even just from like mental health, being able to be seen as the person they want to be seen as, and getting that validation from others, like being able to be visibly whatever gender that they're going for. It's also really hard because my friends who I started uni with, they're buying houses, buying apartments, and for trans people, we're just trying to get a surgery with that money. And so, it really kind of sets you off on the back foot in terms of those, like, life milestones. Obviously well worth it, no regrets.
Definitely. And, you spoke earlier, Alison, about, that sort of how you had this desire to throw an event for the queer community in Canberra. But could you talk a little bit about, how Effulgent has created really solidified that sense of community through the event?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one thing that has really helped is our low ticket prices for tickets start at $25 for Effulgent. It's like a 6-hour party. But part of the reason we've been able to do that is because of our communities. Everyone's volunteering, whether it's DJs, whether it's the drag artists. We actually get the venue hire for free as well. So all of these things mean that we can have lower prices for tickets. And, there was a queer party early this year. They were actually, like, touring Australia. And when they came to Canberra, tickets were $75. And I think that having lower ticket prices available and free upon request for people who are struggling financially, I think that's a really big part of community building. I also think because we have been reaching out and asking people to let us know if they want to DJ, if they want to volunteer, we've now got a little design crew who help with decorating, which is really cool. But a bunch of the people for the upcoming one were volunteers at the last one. And it's, just getting people involved. And it's a time of joy. It's a time of celebration that we get to gather for. So I think that's, yeah, a really cool part of the community we've created.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it sounds like it's creating a space where, you know, people can really come and be themselves and, you know, feel that, you know, freedom in self-expression in coming to those events. But, yeah, I know that your next fundraiser is coming up in September. Could you talk us through a little bit about that and, you know, how people can find out more?
Yeah, for sure. So it's coming up in the first weekend of September at our usual location, Gang Gang Cafe in Downer, if anyone's in town. Yeah, you can find us on social media, Effulgent on Facebook, effulgent.cpr on Instagram. We are quite active on Instagram, I would say that's where to go. But yeah, it's going to be on the Alice in Wonderland theme. And yeah, I'm very excited. Big things coming.
Yeah. Well, no, that all sounds, yeah, very exciting. And yeah, definitely people should check out your social media pages to find out more about the event and, you know, how they can support the fundraiser as well, even if they're not able to attend in person. But thank you so much for joining us on Tuesday Breakfast this morning, Alison.
Thank you so much for having me, Juliet. It's, yeah, very exciting time. Thank you.
Well, we've been speaking to Alison Wong, the founder and creative director of Effulgent, a community fundraiser for trans youth and young people in Canberra. And you can find out more at effulgent.cbr on Instagram.
Hello, this is Chloe Alison Escott of the Native Cats, and you are listening very closely, I hope, to 3CR.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and it's been a massive show today. So we started off at 7:15 and we played a speech from the Convergence on Canberra, which took place about 2 weeks ago, which saw Palestine allies from across the country come together to call upon the Australian government to impose sanctions on Israel. And we listened to a speech from Raima Naji, who spoke at the opening of Parliament, and she was a Greens candidate for the federal seat of Moreton and is a community organiser and activist. And then at 7:30, we heard from Margaret Beavis, who is a former GP who teaches medicine at Melbourne Uni and is part of the organisation Healthcare Workers for Palestine, and she spoke about the rolling hunger strikes that healthcare workers are taking part in to show their support and solidarity with Palestine. And then at 7:45, we heard from May Aziz, the national spokesperson for Everybody's Home, the national campaign dedicated to solving the housing crisis in Australia. And then finally, at 8 o'clock, we heard Scarlett Trewover speaking to Beth on Done by Law from a few weeks ago, and then we finished up at 8:15 with a conversation with Alison Wong, the founder and creative director of Effulgent, a community-led queer fundraiser. And that's all we have time for. Up next is Accent of Women.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.